going deep. I feel like Kalo on the Miami Heat. The words I speak off this sheet are like a three-peat. I don't just hop on a track, I bring running cleats. I'm a player for real, more than an athlete. Let my mama tell it, could have ran for the Senate. Instead I penned it for Donovan Bennett. I'm cemented, this a deep dive. In your headphones or a long drive, up close and personal, just like you courtside. There ain't no out of bounds here, no offsides. We going live in 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. You are now tuned in to Going Deep with Donovan Bennett.
Thanks so much, Capital. It is the Going Deep podcast. I am Donovan Bennett, and I have been immersed in all things Olympics. I'm sure for many of you, the same is true. How do you not love what our Canadian athletes have done? Every time I look up, it's a first-time medal in this sport or a best-ever finish in this sport. And also, every time I look up, we are being led by our ladies, the women who the majority of our team is, even though for the first time at the Olympics there is gender parity across sports. On Team Canada, there are more women than men. And certainly when it comes to racking up medals, it's been all about the women. And this episode, for the most part, will be all about both the Olympics, but also a sport that's in the Olympics and deserves to stay there, and that's skateboarding. But first, we're going to talk about some of the takeaways and show my head is spinning a little bit. Every day is a blur. Every day is Groundhog Day. Every day I get up at 4 and 5 and watch whatever is happening on the pool or on the court or on the track. I have so many distinct memories of these games already, and they're not even over. What's your biggest takeaways thus far of Paris 2024?
So, Donovan, I have been doing recently quite a fair bit of Sportsnet Today, Sportsnet Tonight. It's always pretty fun when I get to chat with our pal Jesse Rubinoff, who obviously is now in Paris at the Olympics. So I haven't spoken to him in a while. But, you know, Mike Gentile, Daniele Franceschi, all of my pals here across the network. And recently, I was with Gentile before he went on vacation, and he and I were talking about the Olympics prior to the competition getting started. And we were talking about Summer McIntosh, and we were chatting with Arash Madani, our very own Arash, who, of course, is also in Paris, or in France, I should say, all over the variety, various parts of France. And we talked to Brittany McLean, who is doing some analysis work, as you know, for CBC, former bronze medalist Brittany McLean, with Team Canada a couple of years ago in the relay in the pool. And both of them decided to highlight Summer McIntosh. And I got to say, it has been absurd to watch Summer do the things she was doing. So, of course, the first medal for her at these games was a silver medal. But the second medal was such a dominant win that when she was finished swimming, she finished 5.69 seconds, I believe, ahead of the silver medalist. Like she was stopped, took her cap off, took her goggles off, stopped in the pool to watch the silver medalist touch the wall 5.69 seconds later. That is truly absurd. That's the sport she's best in, as we know, the 400-meter individual medley. And then she picks up a third gold medal, her fourth of these games, on Saturday. Just another absurd thing. It's funny, I was doing the Blue Jays game when this came out, when the race was happening, I should say. And it was so impressive. I was scrambling to find the channel. I was like, oh my God, like they're not showing it on the in-house feed here in the studio. Like, where's the channel? So I kept switching it around, and I finally got to watch Summer win the 200 meter individual medley, essentially like just in time to watch the last lap, the last 50 meters in the pool, just in time to watch her in the last like 25 meters, it felt like pull ahead of the American to win gold. She is absolutely dominant. It's just incredible to watch. She is the first Canadian, as I know you know, she is the first Canadian ever, Donovan, ever in the history of this country to win three gold medals at a single games. That is one of the most absurd statistics ever. Think about all of the dominant athletes that have come out of our great country over the many years. And I think when you talk about the Summer Games in particular, because, you know, in the country we live in, the Winter Olympics, you know, I think for a fair amount of reasons, and like even beyond hockey, but like curling and ice dance and all, and the speed skating and so on, like for a lot of reasons, Canada, the Great White North, is dominant in the Winter Olympics. So I think for like much of my life, the Summer Olympics has been viewed as like the younger sibling, you know what I mean? But I don't think that's the case anymore, right? When you talk about the most dominant athletes at Summer Olympics for Team Canada, you know, you think of Donovan Bailey, who you spoke to on the podcast just before the Olympics started. But I mean, I actually genuinely think even Donovan Bailey would admit that the talent we're seeing coming out of Summer McIntosh is something we have literally never seen before. Like at these Summer Olympics, you talk about dominant performances and Katie Ledecky, absolutely dominant also in the pool, right? And she's been doing it for many Olympics now, not just her, not her first games. We have seen, I mean, even if you want to go back to Michael Phelps, certainly as well, but at these Olympics specifically, Simone Biles do some absolutely silly things and winning many more gold medals to go with the haul that she'd already had over these past, you know, two or three Olympic cycles. Honestly, I think if you're telling the story of dominance at these Olympics, there are a lot of really cool firsts, certainly, and we'll talk about that. But when you're talking about dominance at these Olympics, Summer McIntosh has been one of the most dominant athletes on the women's side of any sport. And I think that deserves some recognition, I think. I mean, I mentioned Arash before. Arash was very fond of saying it's going to be the summer of summer. And man, was he right. Like it's just been so much fun to watch. And I couldn't be happier for Summer McIntosh.
She's 17.
That's incredible.
By the time we get to the next games in LA, she's going to barely be able to drink in the United States. Like, that's how young she is. She was mad that when she was 14, she didn't make the podium. She just missed with a fourth place finish. And the wild thing to me about her is she could be swimming more distances, more events, more strokes. They have to pare down basically what she's going to try to place in, because the Olympic schedule in comparison to other meets is so hectic because, and it's spread out to 9 days, eight, depending on when you start, because they want to get all of the big races in for the various prime times in different countries around the world. So as we've seen, she's swimming a semifinal, then she's getting, you know, out of the pool, doing the mixed zone interviews with Devin Haru and company, and then jumping back in for a relay. It's wild to me, and it's just so counterintuitive because so we come from the scenario where we don't have Cal Ripken's anymore. We're monitoring pitches. We're taking scheduled rest days. We're easing people through. We've got no pads on for OTAs. Everything else in our sports context is about making sure the athletes are optimal freshness, which is not a real term that I just made up, optimal freshness for when it matters most. And then I'm at the Olympics, I'm like, Felix, you're playing mixed doubles? What are you doing? Why don't you rest? It's just the mindset is different, especially in swimming. But I guess it just hits different when you have an opportunity to rack up multiple medals representing your country.
By the way, a quick shout out to Kylie Moss, U of T alum, much like myself, always going to rep the Varsity Blues, which, let's be real, Donovan, have not been particularly successful in our lifetimes. So whenever I can see someone like Kylie go out there and also go in some more medals, I think she won her fifth Olympic medals like over the course of her Olympic career, not just at these games. But I got to say, I was pretty happy.
Five medals at UFT, strong in swimming, though. So
this is true.
Not as strong in football, per se, but strong in swimming. But I love her. I've interviewed her before. You know, she's a former world record holder, as you mentioned, five medals, which puts you in rare air in terms of Olympians in our country. But it's just a grinder. It comes out of LaSalle, Ontario, goes to UFT, wasn't a huge recruit, is not like everyone else in the field, you know, 6'3" with these long limbs, but just gets everything out of her ability and is technically very sound. And I remember talking to a trainer at UFT because the same training staff that was working with the football team would be working with the high performance athletes and swimmers coming out of that program. And they produced a bunch. Kylie was there. Penny Oleksiak swam through there. And he said, if all of my athletes had the dog that she does, like the mama mentality, like they would be at a different level. Won't say any names in terms of who he was referencing, but just, I think I and many Canadians can respect the fact that there's nothing whenever she decides to hang up her swim cap or two, because swimmers wear two.
That's
one,
true.
You know, cover their hair, and then the other to keep those goggles nice and tight. Whenever she hangs up her swim caps, she can have no regrets. So yeah, I was super happy in the fastest field ever, you know, in terms of where backstroke is right now, that she was able to get her hand on the wall quickly and sneak out another bronze medal.
So Donovan, you've been let's call it on assignment for CBC, which has been pretty cool. I've been watching a lot of your the videos that you've been doing for CBC. I've been seeing your hits on the national and on the variety of news programs that the CBC puts out across the country, which is really cool. I've kind of likened the videos you're doing, like in a newsy way, I suppose. Do you remember when Saturday Night Live, like a maybe like 10, 15 years ago, whenever Andy Samberg was on it, and he kind of created the idea of like digital shorts. That's yes. Kind of what you're doing kind of reminds me. It's like the CBC's digital shorts. I love them. They're really cool. So you've now, because of the digital shorts for CBC, as I've dubbed them personally, you might call them something else, perhaps. But what has been the story that stood out to you the most so far? You've had a lot of eyes on it. I mean, there have been a ton of stories. I mean, we talked about Summer, we talked about Kylie, and I mean, they're like for good reason getting a lot of publication. But I mean, you talk about some of the other athletes that, because you know, people will say, oh, these are the expected medal totals in these sports. I mean, no one really knows, right? Until you actually go. I think that's almost like the entire point of the whole Olympics. Like, you don't actually know who's going to show out with an incredible story of perseverance or athletic display, sportsmanship, all these things. Like, that's inherently a part of why we watch the Olympics and this athletics competition. So, I mean, there have been a lot of firsts for Canada, right? I mean, there's been Eleanor Harvey, who won a bronze medal in the fencing. I got to say, her look of disbelief when she realized she had won was priceless. Like, that's a picture you get framed. That's something you see for the rest of time. Krista DeGucci winning the first ever gold medal for Canada in judo. Phenomenal performance. And I think a story of, I mean, you talk about perseverance, but certainly I think a story of Canada when you talk about like immigrants coming to this country and becoming Canadians. Well done for Krista DeGucci winning gold in the judo. A lot of events have happened since then. I mean, there's the bronze medal in synchronized swimming. There was the women's rugby team winning a silver medal, the best result for Rugby Canada literally ever. There's been, let's see, the women's rowing eights winning silver as well after they won gold in Tokyo. And so they were really happy to get atop the podium, back-to-back podiums for that team. Well done to the women rowing eights team. And hey, I mean, we're talking about swimming. The Josh Liendo and Ilya Haroon winning two medals. He's 19 years old. He's the first man, when he won the first bronze medal, certainly a couple days ago, but when he won the first bronze medal, he became the first man to win an Olympic medal for Team Canada since 2012, because most of the Olympic medals in the pool have come from women since then. Very impressed by him. But the 19-year-old Haroon, alongside Josh Liendo, Scarborough Mans, let's go. But Josh Liendo, the first Black Canadian to ever win an Olympic medal, and certainly Black Canadian man. So there have been a lot of firsts and a lot of really impressive athletic performances. I mean, hell, by athletes of every country, not just Team Canada. I obviously focus on Team Canada, but I mean, you look at some other ones as well. I forget her name, but there was a race I saw where Team Sweden was, I think, coming down the stretch against the American and maybe the women's 400-meter butterfly. And I mean, you see some of the margins here, right? Like, you see, it was, I think, the Swedish gold medalist in the end. She touches the wall like a tenth of a second ahead of the silver medalist. I mean, it's just incredible stuff you see. I mean, Josh Liendo was also that close from winning a gold. I mean, you saw on Saturday, Julian Alfred winning the first ever gold medal for the country of St. Lucia. The first gold medal ever in the history of that country. It's a country that has just over 180,000 people, and they just produced not just the gold medalist, but the fastest woman on the planet. That is incredible. By the way, if you haven't seen the videos of people watching her, like in a town square, like in St. Lucia, and you watch them react to her winning a gold medal, and she won by like 0.15 seconds over Sha'Carri Richardson, who was the favorite to win gold from the United States. But I mean, like, she kind of dusted them. No, I mean, I know it sounds like such a crazy thing to say when it's that small of a margin, but I got to say, there have been so many amazing performances. The Alfred one I thought was particularly great because, I mean, how many times you get to witness live someone winning their first ever gold medal for your country ever? Like, he's a hero in St. Lucia for the rest of time. But, I mean, I gotta know, when you look at firsts at these great Olympic Games so far, and there's a lot of time left, I'm curious what you see.
I'll give you the most random one and the most mainstream one. The most random would be your girl, Si Ying Seng. The 58-year-old table tennis player, it's not ping pong people, table tennis player who was a phenom at the age of 18 coming out of China. And so, as you well know, in 1986, they changed the ruling into two-sided paddles and two colored panels, and that threw your girl off, so much so that she retired, didn't go to the first Olympics that had table tennis, actually moved to Chile, coached kids table tennis, and then for 20 years just did not pick up a paddle until the pandemic, where all of us were stuck inside looking for something to do. She gets a table and a couple pads, and she finds a love for it, qualifies for the Olympics through Chile, and now she's here. Now, did she make it out of the prelims? No. But the point is that you never give up on your dreams, that life and success is not linear. I just love the fact that
it's pretty cool.
Someone's grandma is out here rocking butterfly style at the Olympics. But the one that actually I've been the most riveted by, locked in on, has taken over my household, it's been the men's basketball team.
Sure.
We have talked about this, it feels like, for so long. 2011, Corey Joseph and Tristan Thompson both drafted in the first round after 1 year in the NCAA at Texas. 2015, Anthony Bennett, first overall. Bill Simmons on the broadcast. Whoa! Remember that? Next year after that, Andrew Wiggins, first of all, Canada. Forget that. The GTA has two back-to-back first overall picks. New York, LA, can't say that. Then we've got this wave of players coming through, and yet we don't qualify. People are at summer league, contract years, injury. Finally, after missed qualification, we've made it. Not through a last chance tournament. We win a medal at the World Cup. We get a bronze. We get the squad back up with a couple reinforcements. And we're in the Olympics in the group of death. Get out the group undefeated. It's just been so nice to see two full five-man units that Jordy Fernandez is utilizing of all NBA players that fit, that are role-defined in terms of, it's not just an all-star team, it's actually a basketball team. If I could just get Masai Ujiri to give all of these guys the max and pay the repeater tax and just assemble Team Canada on the Raptors, how much I would love it. I've been so loving watching this team play. The way they play, FIBA officiating is unfortunately very frustrating. But yeah, maybe it's because we talked about it for so long, and as much as I loved the Raptors championship parade, I thought to myself, well, what would this be like for our actual national team? And so it's been cool to see and not to have to stay up and watch League Pass to watch Shea or Jamal or Dylan, all of our great players that just end up in the West.
Yeah, it's true. I think if anything I've realized is that, and I think I kind of knew this already when the Thunder were in the playoffs, Donovan, but I think I've now thought to myself after watching Shea wear the Maple Leaf, I think to myself, man, I would do unspeakable things to make him a Toronto Raptor. Truly, I would.
He is so good. Everything is so easy, so under control. You can't speed him up. And we've actually seen him with a little edge this tournament. Normally he's, you know, too cool for school.
Nikhil gets elbowed. He's barking at the Greece player.
Yeah, he's on a fast break. He's sticking his tongue out like he's Jordan in 92 in Barcelona. Yeah, I've loved it. Okay, before we take a break, we still have some big things on the schedule left in terms of Olympic programming. The one event coming up that's no PVR, it's no recap, primetime show with Andy Petrillo and friends. You are watching it live Eastern time, no matter what it is. What's that event for you?
Ooh, gosh. It's got to be, man, it's got to be the 100-meter dash, no? Like, I want to see Andre DeGrasse do his thing. Like, I think we're at the point of the Olympics where the swimming competitions are kind of starting to wind down, right? Because it's a 9-day competition and we're towards the end of those 9 days. So there's still some medals left to be won on that side, you hope, by Summer McIntosh and company. But now that they're kind of starting to pivot into the athletic side of things, I'm really looking forward to Andre DeGrasse. I can't wait. It's the purest Donovan expression of, I think, what the Olympics means. Like, the Olympics certainly by far is like this friendly international competition, sportsmanship, all these different things. But I mean, I think when you distill it down to what's the coolest, fastest thing you can watch, I think in any sport, it's probably the 100-meter dash. And I mean, Andre DeGrasse has as good a chance as anyone else to take home a gold finally.
I don't know if the odds makers would agree with you, as he's had the 30th fastest time in the 100 this year. It's an incredibly fast field. He's going to have to work to get into the final. However, he's been to two Olympic Games in three distances. He's found a way to reach the podium each time.
Yep.
So bet on Andre at your own peril. The big meets, he shows up, plays possum a little bit during the Diamond League season, and then tapers to when it matters the most. I'm going to shift off that a little bit, and I'll give you two. One, breaking. Breaking is in for Paris. It's not in for LA, which is ridiculous.
Really? But, I didn't know that.
You know, baseball and softball.
Interesting.
You know, reportedly will be in for LA. I don't really know how baseball is not in. We're going to have flag football. We're going to have literally a sport at recess in gym classes at the Olympics. But baseball doesn't have enough parity across the world, even though it's huge in Asia. It's huge in the Caribbean and Latin America. It's obviously very big in North America. But we're going to have flag football. Anyways, baseball and softball should never have left. Breaking won't be in. Every games, the host nation can tweak a little bit and put some things in. So France wanted breaking, and evidently Los Angeles does not. However, I'm going to be really looking forward to breaking, seeing friend of the program, Canadian representative, Phil Kim, Phil Wizard.
Phil Wizard, that's
technically,
right.
Technically. Yeah. Trying to be one of the best B-boys in the world in the 16 field of B-boys and B-girls. But the other one is similar to yours, the 4x1. Which goes next Friday, I believe. All the days seem to run together.
Time is a flat circle, Donovan.
Yes, that's right. Because when Andre gets the stick, assuming, you know, he, one, Canada qualifies for the final, and two, he's healthy. When Andre gets the stick, he's going to be running probably a little bit more than 100 meters, depending on how that turn exchange goes. Let's call it 120. He's going to be running the last 120 meters of his Olympic career. He's not going to be in LA. It's a feat for a sprinter to make it to three games, never mind. Even though Shelly-Ann Fraser-Pryce is like, there is no such thing as time. I'm always going to the Olympics. And so to see him reel in the Americans, Noah Lyles, or reel in the Jamaicans, or try to extend a lead and run away from them when that stick gets passed to him, I think will be fascinating. And I remember feeling like this in 96. Everyone's like, oh, where were you when Bailey won? And yeah, I trust me, I'm right there with you. But to me, the 4x1 win was like the extra emphasis. It was like ending the dominoes game, double six, slamming it on the table, because you can't say anything. This is not an outlier.
Right.
We had four dudes that went around this oval faster than you. And it's not necessarily the fastest. It's the team who gets to stick around the fastest. And this group with Aaron Brown and Brendan Rodney, they've been together for a long time, and Jerome Blake. So, yeah, I would love to see them go out in style with a team gold.
Before we go, do you have an early pick for closing ceremonies flag bearer? Like, I know, obviously, there's so many more things that have to actually take place, and if, like, I don't know, if, like, Canada beats the U.S. and wins gold in men's basketball, maybe it's Shea. If Andre wins the gold, maybe he wins, maybe he's the guy. There are a lot of potential contenders. My personal pick is, I must feel like unless something really changes, it's going to be Summer, but I wonder if there's a sneaky side contender for you here.
It's not going to be Summer, and here's why. She's going to be done day 9.
Do you think she'll just go home?
Yes. And so those games were the last games were different because of COVID. So literally you had to go home. But in general, the first week athletes are there for 1, maybe 2 days, and then they're out. And then they're back to their home country. So I don't know that Summer is going to be there. I don't think it's going to be DeGrasse because he was the flag bearer for the opening ceremonies. But I also think by the time the basketball program is over, people are going to be more and more locked in to the basketball. So I think SGA is a good example. But as you said to me off air, they got to pick a woman. The women have been dominating. Who else but Vanessa Gilles,
ooh,
who has opened her heart, spoke empathetically to the country, has given us our this era's Phil Esposito, Wayne Gretzky, Haley Wickenheiser moment. The only thing she didn't say was go all Donovan Bailey and say, she's a chicken, she's a coward. Now, I don't know if she would be talking about Bev Priestman or the arbitrator at the Court of Sport Arbitration or whatnot. But either way, two clutch goals. Country's fallen in love with her. I think she would be an apt one, and she would obviously represent the team that I think it would be too far to say that the country's fell in love with, but I think they fell in like with and certainly are inspired by their level of resilience.
I think it's a good pick. I think that's a great pick, I think. I think if you're down to Gilles...
Play some money, show.
Yeah, I know. I have to go find my nearest bookie, I think, Donovan. But hey, I at least try and get some sleep over these next couple of weeks. So waking up at 4, going to bed at probably like 2 or something. Try and get some rest.
I have a 5-year-old and a 2-year-old. I'm allergic to rest.
That's fair.
Let's take a break, literally. Maybe I'll get a quick nap in during this break, and then we'll come back with more.
My name is Lucille Bryan.
I'm Clifton Bryan.
My grandson is a show.
And I'm so happy that you're listening to Going Deep with Donovan Bennett.
I'm so glad that he had a show. Thank you.
Thanks so much, Grandma and Granddad. This is Going Deep. And I know a lot of you have been going deep on all things Olympics. I know I have. And I love to watch, I don't know if obscure is the right word in terms of the sports, but the less than mainstream ones that we see in a high-profile way during the Olympics. And for many people, that's skateboarding. And I was lucky to be a part of an event recently here in Canada, in Toronto. It's the 3rd annual Bunt Jam presented by Vans. Essentially a celebration of skate culture in Toronto and Canada. You may know, because you're listening to a podcast right now, of the Bunt Live podcast, which started, you know, really to bring a light to the sport. Well, now they're doing events alongside of Vans. And I was there catching up with some of the skaters, some with Olympic experience, others with Olympic hopes and dreams, talking about the growth of the sport and really the diversity of the sport. First person I talked to was Zion Wright. He's from Jupiter, Florida, currently residing in L.A., and he rose to prominence early in his career just by being a standout in contests and also filming his own content in the streets. But he's solidified himself as one of the next great stars in the sport and a big member of the USA skateboarding team. And I hollered at him at Bump Jam.
So Zion, talk to me about the skate culture here in Canada and at the Bunt. How's it compared to skating all around the world?
I mean, it's pretty special, you know. The skate community here is really strong. And then as far as with the Bunt being involved, bringing this out to the community, the third annual year, it's just, you know, getting better and better. So it's really cool to be able to have this, be able to come out to Canada, come to Toronto, hang out, skate, enjoy the skate culture, because, you know, skating is very diverse and it's spread out everywhere. So it's cool to be able to come to different places and be able to come and connect.
I love you mentioned the diversity. How did you get into the game?
So I got into skating from my brother. He got a board 1 year for Christmas. I didn't get one. Like the same year, I felt left out. And then I got one the next year. And then from there, it was just pretty much all up. I just was following him behind his footsteps. And yeah, just kind of just ran with it, you know?
Oh. Talk to me about the barrier of entry to the sport and to the community of skating.
Well, yeah, I feel like, you know, skating is something that there's no color in skating, you know, as far as just the aspect of where it is, how spread out it is, how diverse it is. And like, yeah, it's just, we're just all out here having fun, enjoying one thing that connects us all and to be able to all bring us together. And I feel like that's why the community for us is so strong and just so great, because, yeah, we're just able to bond and connect and be able to explore and do it, you know, at a high level and do it wherever we want it to.
Do you feel...
That makes sense, if that answered your question.
Oh, it does. Okay. Do you feel, though, that people who look like you look up to you and try to get in the game because of the representation you provide?
For sure, 100%. You know, I feel like more now, there's been a lot more color coming into skating as far as just, like, yeah, the diversity of it. I mean, I feel like for me growing up, when I got into it, it was like, oh, okay, I got into it. I will see much people that look like me. And then when I started to did see those people, I'm like, oh, wow, like, these people are doing it, you know. I have an opportunity to do this too. And now it's cool to be able to do it at the level that I'm doing it, have the platform to be able to spread it out and show the people that, you know, you could do it too.
You can get a board for relatively cheap. You can use the world's canvas as your playground. Yes. But if when you're at your level, you can make some bread skating. What's it like having the support of sponsors for you to be able to go at it really hard?
I mean, it's really important, and it's really special, I feel like, to be able to have the opportunity, to have the backing for us to be able to push ourselves and to be able to do what we do. Like, as far as, you know, Vans being able to get us where we need to go around the world, set us up, and then me being able to have, like, Red Bull as far as, like, from an athletic standpoint, on a performance level, to be able to get him there, work on my health, work on my nutrition, do all this stuff to where it's like, you know, we are skaters, but at the end of the day, we're doing this at a very high level. So we got to be able to keep up with, you know, the craft, keep up with our bodies.
High level, going from wanting a board like your brother to being at the Olympics. Talk to me about what that's like for you.
Yeah, I mean, it's really, you know, surreal type of moment as far as never thought a kid from a little small town, Jupiter, Florida, whatever, be able to go to present the games and present it for skateboarding at that and for the U.S. So really special moment being able to be a part of that. And yeah, just, you know, really eye-opening, you know, to be able to go there and really, like, be in the culture of it, to really see that, you know, people really dedicate their whole lives to just that one moment, that 60 seconds, or however long it is for them to achieve and show their talent. So really cool to be able to have that opportunity to do that. And yeah, represent the U.S., represent.
Have you noticed a difference in people's reaction to the sport from when you started to now, since it's been in the games for a bit?
For sure. You know, like, I mean, as far as to, like, just people kind of coming out the woodworks, like little kids, Japan, all over, just like, it's really, you can really see that people are seeing what's going on and they're going to do the work to be able to pop out and present. So it's really cool to see us that.
And lastly, I'm going to have my little guy here, and I love the fact that he can look up to a Zion on the court or a Zion on, you know, the skateboard, the half pike. For you, when people are looking to be a part of not just the sport, but the community of skating, what would you tell them?
I would just tell them, have fun. Be yourself, you know? Have fun, be yourself. Anything's possible. You know, if we truly love and enjoy what you do, then, you know, good things will come out of it. It's all about just having a good attitude, having a good mindset with the stuff you do, right? And surround yourself around good people, too.
I love Zion's swag and his enthusiasm, and he's very similar to a local Canadian that I also spoke to, Stefan Boca. He's a skateboarder from right here in the GTA with, like me and my grandparents, Jamaican roots. But he is really an skate influencer, I would say. He's into fashion. He's got a line. Obviously, you know, skateboarding is the main thing, but also a real great eye in terms of photography. And those varied interests and the ability to want to stand out make him pretty special. And that's what I learned when I talked to Stefan Boca.
All right, man, you're the hometown hero.
Yep.
Everyone's super stoked to see you out here. What's it like for you to have this, the Bunt, in your hometown and you be one of the headliners?
I mean, this is like the third annual Bunt Jam in Toronto, and it's amazing to see everyone here. Like, Toronto's a super small city, but it's big in personality and culture. And it's really nice to see everyone come here and enjoy it too. So it's sick seeing the Bunt do this for skateboards.
What's the skate culture in Toronto, in Canada, like in comparison to other parts of the world?
The skate culture in Canada is pretty tight. Like, everyone knows each other. Whether you live in Vancouver, Montreal, or Calgary, or Toronto, everyone kind of has an idea of who's who. And I think that's really special because you kind of go anywhere in this place and have friends. And just because it's like a very tight community. So I like it. I love the Canadian bureaucracy. Compared to America, where there's just way more people, people know you, but it's not the same. Like, it's, I don't know. We're all going through it here.
Is there a distinct style or trait to Canadian skaters in comparison to the rest of the world?
Yeah, I feel like Canadian skaters have to be diverse, you know, in the way we got 6 months of snow. What are you doing? You can't skate the whole year, so kind of have to keep yourself motivated and busy, whether you find the indoor skate parks like CJ's or Skate Off, or you pick up a new hobby and then come back to skating in the summer. So I think that in itself makes skaters here unique and diverse people off the skateboard.
How did you get into skating?
I got into skating because my big brother. We used to skate. I grew up in Rexdale. He was the only skater out there, and I thought that was sick because everyone was playing basketball, and I just liked something different, and I liked skateboarding.
Was that easy for you, as a young black kid in Rexdale, to be skating and not, you know, doing the prototypical black thing?
No, it was not easy. Got crazy comments all the time, you know, oh, white boy, like all those stereotypes, like, why is this black kid playing that? But I thought that was really cool. I thought that was like, oh, I'm doing something different, and it felt good. And I really noticed that until later in my life. Like, that's what it meant. I was going on a different path just through skateboarding. And I think it's a blessing because I got to experience the whole world of skating. And like I said, skate community is super tight. So anywhere you go in this world, you're a part of that community. And being from a kid from Rexdale and being a part of different communities around the world, best thing I could have asked for.
What's it like for you now that you've gotten a lot of things those kids wanted to get from basketball?
Yeah.
A shoe deal, going pro, playing around the world, competing at a high level.
Damn. You know what? I think what it means is that you can do anything and excel in anything, no matter where you're from, where you started, what you have or what you don't have. It's just what you want to do and what you can fathom in your dream. It's all doable. I think that's the best thing about being Canadian. So we can do anything.
I have my young son here stoked to watch you perform. What's it like for you that now there are a bunch of young kids, Canadians, young black kids, looking up to you and wanting to do what you're doing?
I think that was like kind of my goal from the beginning, was just to, you know, I don't see too many people that look like me in this community in Canada. And I wanted to just make sure I was there for the kids that needed to see me maybe do it so they can think they can do it too, because it's monkey see, monkey do. So if, I don't know, if I can inspire somebody, I feel like I feel beyond grateful for just continuing on the journey of skating here.
The journey you're on now is you're doing it at a high level, really yeah. attacking it like a pro. What does it mean for you to have sponsors to help you make this not a hobby, but a profession?
Yeah, so the sponsors definitely allow me to handle life expenses and be able to enjoy this sport. Because living in Toronto, I've had 3 jobs. I've had freelance photographer, working at this skate shop, working at a grocery store all at once, and still trying to skate for 20 minutes a day to an hour a day, something just to keep it. And now having the skaters sponsorships to like free my time. Shout out to Stussy, shout out to Vance, shout out to Gold Candy too. And yeah, they definitely, it's like a freeing thing. Like I can go where I want, I can get a budget for where I want, and tickets, transportation, it's best. Thank you, Vance.
The fashion aspect yeah. of the sport, obviously, you know, rocking yeah. Vans on the feet, but also, you know, you guys are creating, yeah. you're fresh and you're creating culture. What's it like for you to push the fashion as well?
Yeah, the fashion for me is like kind of a big part of it, because I've always loved the music industry and some form of expression. And I find that skateboarding, you're always pushing through the streets and you're passing so many people and you kind of, what am I wearing? Like, what are these people thinking of me? And you kind of want to leave a good impression on people. So having a sponsorship of Stussy's made it like super fun to like wear whatever they send me and what I pick from their catalog. And I can inspire other people. And then I have friends who make clothes like Continuo, shout out to them. And they've been killing it in Montreal, owning it down and inspiring the nation with fashion. So it's super sick just to be a part of this streetwear scene and wear what you think is dope. And then, I don't know, inspire kids to express themselves. That's all that matters, to express yourself.
Lastly, you mentioned inspire.
Yeah.
The kids who are watching this, kids who are here trying the tricks that you're landing, if there's one thing you want them to learn from your story, what would it be?
One thing is that, you know, following everyone else, if that's what you want to do, sure. But if that's not what you want to do, don't do it. Do what you want and dream, write down your dreams and try to fathom them and then just try it. If that's we're only here for so long, and just enjoy the beautiful nature and the beautiful outdoors and the beautiful faces, and that's all that matters. And whatever you want to do, just do it and take care of your family and friends. And that's the best thing I think about life.
Awesome. You're living the good life right now. Enjoy it. Looking forward to seeing what you do, not only today, but with the rest of your career and who you inspire. So thank you, my man.
Drugs are bad. I forgot to say that. Drugs are bad.
Yeah. Thank you for that PSA.
Yeah, I really think he is going to inspire young boys and girls to pick up skating here in Canada. And I emphasize girls because it is a sport with gender diversity, and the girls who are in it are super rad, including our next guest, Lizzie Armanto, who is amazingly talented, has essentially raised the bar in terms of the types of tricks that women skaters are even attempting. She's been a protege of Tony Hawk for quite some time, and every time she gets on a board, she seems to make history. I talked to her about that history at Bunt Jam recently.
Lizzie, you're at the level where you get to skate everywhere. What's it like for you to skate here at the Bunt in Canada compared to the other skating cultures around the world?
I mean, this is a fun event, so I'm just excited to like hang out, see what everyone's gonna do, get to like mess around on the course.
What was your entry into the skate game like?
So I started skating because my younger brother wanted to try it, and then it just became the place that I went to after school all the time. And was cooler than the library. And I started doing contests, and then after that I was like hooked. And I think a big part of it was the community.
What did the community mean to you?
I just feel like skating is so diverse in the sense that like you could come from any background, and when you're at the skate park, you're kind of on the same level. Like you could be really old or like a little kid learning how to skate, and you'll skate together and learn a new trick. And there's not many places where, you know, they put those two people in the same category. And skateboarding is so accessible. Like all you need is some flat ground and a board. You don't need like to sign up for a time. You don't need a team to do it. You can just go meet up forever and you can do it with friends or do it on your own.
You've become a role model for all skaters, including female skaters. Did you have female role models in the culture when you came here?
There was some women skaters, but we're kind of like, when I started skating contests, you kind of knew everyone that was like there. And now there's so many women and girls getting into it. And like, I can't keep track. Like on my like Instagram feed, it's just like new people popping up all the time. And like, they're amazing. And so it's so inspiring. And it's truly unbelievable and like far beyond what I could have imagined when I first got into it.
Well, I think many people couldn't imagine the fact that you'd be, you know, the first woman to land a 360 loop, first woman in Tony Hawk's game. For you, the list of accolades and awards is getting pretty long. But what's it been like for you to be on this journey and breaking so many barriers?
I mean, I think I just love skateboarding, and I love that it's something like you're never going to master. Like there's always going to be something new to learn. And like I said, I love the community. Like I've found so many friends here, and I've also just learned so much about myself. And like on a skateboarding teaches you basic lessons, like if you fall you get back up, and that teaches you resilience, and when you apply that to any other part of your life you'll be successful. And I think not many things teach you that.
Now it's gotten so big that you've got corporate sponsors getting involved. For you to be able to attack it like your career, what's it been like to have the support of sponsors?
I mean, the support of my sponsors has been tremendous. Like when I first started skating, there wasn't women who were just skating as a living. Maybe there was like a handful before me, but like a lot of them had another job so that they could skate. And now we're seeing a shift in the culture where women can just be like amazing skateboarders and athletes. And we're seeing skateboarding in the Olympics, and they've provided, the Olympics has provided so much opportunity on the women's end. Because now countries from all over recognize skateboarding, and they will, you know, fund women and girls to focus on that and pursue that, which is amazing.
What was the Olympic experience like for you?
I mean, getting to go to the first Olympics for skateboarding was incredible. It was like such a trip because I feel like people, you know, they train for the Olympics their whole life, and that's like their pinnacle. But when I first started skateboarding, skateboarding wasn't in the Olympics, and so it was such a cool opportunity to represent like skateboarding culture to the rest of the world. And I feel like it's changed my life and been so positive. And I think that opportunity for other people is like tremendous. And we're also going to just see like more skate parks, more like opportunities in skateboarding, and new tricks, new skate scenes. Like, you just never know what's going to come out of it. And I think it's really exciting.
I'm excited to have my little son here, for him to see a lot of dope skaters that look like him. I'm also excited for him to see a lot of rad women who are killing it as well. You know, the message that this community provides for all of us. If someone's looking to get into skate, you know, what would you say to them as a reason why?
I mean, I think skateboarding, like when you watch it, it's just inherently cool or interesting. There's something about it. And I think a big part of it is that it's a form of expression. And so not only are these skaters doing technical tricks, but they're doing it in a way that makes you feel something. And that's inspiring. And I think if you feel inspired, like you should get a board and just try it. And like every one of us here had to start somewhere. We all had our first day on our skateboard. And, you know, if you just keep going and keep practicing, like you can do that.
Awesome. Well, I'm so excited to watch you do it and see where you take the sport after this. Thanks so much. Congrats.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for listening. I hope you're enjoying all things Olympics and you enjoyed that left turn that we took to talk some skating. Please like, favorite, share, subscribe. We've got some really interesting episodes for you on deck, so make sure you stay tuned. Thanks so much.